Good afternoon. I'm Nancy Sarles. I'm 62 years old, and today is Tuesday, June the 8th, 2021, and we are in Waynesboro, Virginia, in the Shenandoah Valley. And I'm here speaking with Sarah Francisco, who is a friend and a colleague in this story that you're going to hear from us.
I'm Sarah Francisco. I'm 41. Today is Tuesday, June 8th, 2021. And we're here in Waynesboro, Virginia. And I'm speaking with Nancy Sarles, a friend and colleague of many years. And we're going to talk about the successful effort to stop the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. So, Nancy, of course, as you know, I grew up on a farm in Augusta County, south of Stanton, here in the Shenandoah Valley. And I've also been an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center since 2002. I currently head up our Virginia office at SELC, and then in my personal life, I'm also a member of the board of the Alliance for the Shenandoah Valley. I think you and I were involved in the effort to stop the Atlantic Coast Pipeline from the first day that we heard about it. This 42-inch, large diameter, high pressure natural gas pipeline was proposed in 2014. It would have run from West Virginia through Virginia and into North Carolina. It was a project primarily of Dominion Energy and Duke Energy, and the purpose was to bring natural gas to gas-fired power plants. It's important to know that this pipeline was not proposed to serve the natural gas needs of the communities that it was passing through.
That's correct. I'm Nancy, and as Sarah said, we're both from Augusta County. I am actually the fourth generation to not be born in this area, but to wind up here and realize that there's no place better than the Shenandoah Valley in Augusta County. And so I've lived here since I was 13, and I have no plans to ever leave, being 62 years old now. In my real life, I'm a historian and a freelance writer. I do a lot of outdoor writing, conservation, hiking, biking. And then in the late 90s, I got involved in an ill-advised land use issue in my community that sort of morphed into somehow me being elected to the Augusta County Board of Supervisors, which in Virginia is the lowest level, but the most important level, in my opinion, of local governance, because it's where the rubber meets the road with the community. And I served 8 years on the Board of Supervisors and had been off for just a couple years when word of this pipeline coming through our community hit. And these were my constituents, the people that I had served for the last 8 years, and in a community that I loved. And this was, you know, we just heard rumors at first, but this was going to come through. Not only was it a 42-inch high-pressure natural gas pipeline, but it was going to come through an area that nobody in the United States had ever tried to run a pipeline of this size before. Mountainous, the Allegheny Mountains, the Blue Ridge Mountains, steep terrain with forests that are wet, which means they have torrential floods at times, and through beautiful pristine farmland, and we're in the area that's the headwaters of the James and the Shenandoah River, so a very important area that was going to be deeply impacted. The other thing is that a word that we learned very quickly was karst. This area is a karst area, which means that a long time, millions of years ago, we were an inland sea, and all those little creatures died and built up limestone at the bottom of the sea. And that limestone is very soluble, which means that when it rains, water comes through and creates caverns and sinkholes and things like that. And it can be very unstable. And when you put a high pressure pipeline through that, you can have a lot of tragic things that impact the water very deeply.
Nancy, we learned so much about the risks of this project as we went along. But what do you most remember from those early days right after the pipeline was first proposed back in the late spring or early summer of 2014? What stands out to you?
Well, what I remember first is I was away at an outdoor writers conference in Texas when I started, and this was May of 2014, and I started hearing a lot of email, like seeing a lot of emails back and forth, and I'm like, what is this natural gas pipeline? What is this? I'm going to just ignore this till I get home. And I got home, and people were just up in arms because they didn't know anything about it, and they got letters in the mail that said, Dominion Energy is going to come onto your property, whether you give us permission or not, and we're going to survey because we're going to put a pipeline through your property. And there's really not anything you can do about it. So we started very organizing quickly, sharing information, had some community meetings, and I think you were involved in a lot of those early meetings. What do you remember about some of that?
Well, when I found out about this, it just hit home for me on a lot of different levels. The initial route of the pipeline was going about a mile from the farm where my father has lived his whole life, where he grew up, where I grew up. You know, Nancy, you remember being at that meeting, you know, at our farmhouse around our dining room table with folks from that part of Augusta County, from the Middlebrook area, from folks who were local conservation leaders and local citizens coming together to say, what can we do to have our voices and our concerns heard? And that meeting really was the beginning of the organization that became the Augusta County Alliance. So it was personally an intense time, but then in my work at the Southern Environmental Law Center, I was leading our national forest protection work at that time. And we had been involved in this effort for many years to working very closely with local groups and local citizens to convince the U.S. Forest Service not to open up the George Washington National Forest for fracking. You and I worked together in that effort. A lot of the folks that were at that meeting at our farmhouse had been involved in forest protection, and they were folks that I had worked with in different ways over the years and knew. And we put all of this effort into protecting this exceptional national forest that is the backdrop to so many beautiful places in the Shenandoah Valley, and such an important resource for us. And along comes this pipeline. It just felt like this pipeline was falling out of the sky, and it was proposed right on top of this national forest. We ended up being successful in that effort, and the Forest Service made an excellent decision not to open up the national forest for gas drilling and fracking, but that was several months into the pipeline fight. So it was just a very intense, intense time.
Right. All of a sudden we were already fighting the fracking, and then we had this double battle on our hands with the pipeline. And the other thing that resonated with our communities with the fracking issue and then with the pipeline, which was going to carry that fracked gas in areas that we're fracking, was our water. And that is something that crossed all spectrums of our community. It didn't matter what political party you were, whether you're conservative or liberal, you drank water, and you needed water for your businesses and for your home and for your farm. And so it resonated with everybody. And, you know, we're a very rural community, but we're not stupid. And we care deeply about those things that are, you know, rooted in our place and in our water. And so we had a meeting at the local firehouse, and that morphed into the meeting around the dining room table at your father's house, and we began organizing. And we had already, as you said, we'd already had these networks of organization in place, me with the Board of Supervisors, and then with the fracking effort, with some farm protection and preservation effort. So we were already turned on how to network, and we just shifted our resources to this fight and quickly formed in our area, and this was happening in a lot of communities in our region, because we were really the ground zero for the pipeline fight, was happening around kitchen tables and dining room tables and firehouses in our few counties that were close by. But we deliberately chose the name the Augusta County Alliance. We were from Augusta County, and we knew that this was a fairly conservative area. We weren't tree huggers as such. We weren't doing it just because, you know, we wanted Bambi to have a place in the forest. We were doing this because we believed in our place and what was right and what was right and what was wrong. And so, and we were united in that across, you know, age, economics, politics. And so we became the Augusta County Alliance, and that stuck with us. We were united all the way through to the end.
Nancy, you made a really important point, I think, about allies from the mountain counties working together. You know, the Nelson County, Augusta County, Highland County, and then Bath County, the mountain counties and the local organizations based in those counties really communicated with one another and organized and shared information and helped one another from the very beginning. And that really carried throughout the whole 6 years that we were taking on this project.
Yeah, we became pretty close, people that we never would have probably interacted with or even knew existed suddenly became our friends across this fight. And we did things quickly. We chipped in. We, you know, everybody had a skill set. Somebody knew how to make bumper stickers, and I still see the bumper stickers, "No Pipeline," on cars as I pass them on the streets here. And we made up signs, and those signs have gone across the nation, really. I've seen those signs that say Augusta County Alliance with our website, "No Pipeline" symbol on it. I've seen it on AP articles and photographs from across the country, including like Alaska and Texas and places like that. We even had, tell us a little bit about our pipeline anthem.
Well, as you said, everyone brought their skills and talents to this, and our wonderful friends, Robin and Linda Williams, the wonderful musicians, they really tapped into that tradition of protest songs and of songs that inspire people to come together and to rise up no matter what the odds. And they wrote a song in the fall of 2014 called "We Don't Want Your Pipeline." And that refrain, "We're gonna put a stop sign on Dominion's pipeline. Go tell your neighbors. Go tell your friends." And what, you know, in those few lines that really struck a chord, literally and figuratively, with what we were trying to do, because this is not a community where people are really put a lot of yard signs in their front yards and go out to a lot of meetings and march around. This is just not that kind of community. But we had to inspire people to say, as Robin and Linda did in that great song, "Nothing is done as long as we stand up." And that was such an important anthem and was so inspiring at both high points and low points to really come back to that song and that touchstone throughout this fight.
Right. And that was the interesting thing was that, so for NPR listeners, they might recognize Robin and Linda from Prairie Home Companion because they were regulars on that show for many years. But the pipeline, the original route of the pipeline, was going to come yards from their property.
Right.
So this was really based in community support and community effort.
They stepped out in their front yard with their instruments and recorded that song.
That's right.
So the one thing that I think about when we talk about that song is, you know, Nancy, maybe you can share a little bit about what you were thinking about at the time, just in terms of what we were up against.
Yeah, it was overwhelming, the enormity of it. Dominion is one of the biggest energy utilities in the country, certainly the biggest east of the Mississippi. So this was, from the very beginning, this was a David and Goliath fight. And one of the earliest newspaper articles about this referenced David and Goliath. We turned out several hundred people at a meeting probably in June or July. It was the summer of 2014, going to the Board of Supervisors, trying to get answers from Dominion about what was going to happen to their property and to their homes and their community. And the newspaper wrote an article and said it was nice that the people turned out. They should expect answers, but they shouldn't expect that they're going to get any solutions. That Dominion, this is a done deal. And it truly is a David and Goliath, except for in this case, David doesn't even have a stone to throw. And so that kind of resonated with us. Several years into our fight, I was at a local store and they have a big bin of books that they give away. And if you want to pick one up, take it home. And right on top of it was a little children's book, and it was David and Goliath. And I picked it up and I carried it with me and I brought it out and I talked, you know, time and again to say, you know, this is not a done deal. We had to keep telling everybody, don't give up. You may not think you're being listened to, but don't give up. We have right on our side and we're going to keep fighting. And so we did. And guess what? That newspaper article, that opinion piece was wrong. We found some stones and we won the fight.
We did. Do you remember how we had to constantly shift our strategy and constantly update our information, particularly in that early?
It was like we were on the phone and getting our heads together like every day, because Dominion shifted the route. They would we would bring up some point and they would find a way around that point or that legal issue. There were many, many times when we thought this is going to be the one that stops it, and they found a way to keep going. We thought early on the route came through over Shenandoah Mountain, and there were some endangered species that were being threatened, and the Forest Service actually told them they couldn't go over that. They couldn't take that route, and we thought, well, this is it, and they rerouted it, impacted more people, made the route longer, and all that did is bring more allies onto our side.
And it really showed that there was no good route through this region. This wasn't a problem that could really be fixed by adjusting the route. This whole region was totally inappropriate for a project like this. And that was a reality that the company did not want to confront.
Right. Dominion, I don't think Dominion had never come up against opposition before. They were, you know, corporate bully is the right word. They were sure of what they were going to do. They had planned this. This was going to make money for them, and that's the way it was going to be. And then from the 10,000 foot perspective, they drew a line from West Virginia through Virginia all the way down to almost South Carolina, and that was their route, and they were going to stick to it. And then when you get boots on the ground and you see the variations that needed to happen to avoid someone's septic field or to avoid a sinkhole, they were so confident in their ability to always get done what they wanted done that they had no compassion for making things right or for getting down on the ground and working with the communities to move the route a few feet so it wouldn't go through a family's septic field and then they would have to leave their home because there was no place to put an alternate septic field. They didn't budge an inch. There was no compassion. And so as a consequence, they built up a level of community disgust with them, really, is the best way to put it. And they also felt like this is what they wanted to do. And, you know, the laws that everybody else had to follow didn't necessarily apply to them. If they wanted to make the route go this way, it didn't really matter if that was going to have a stream crossing that would impact an endangered species or anything like that.
Or a water supply
like the city of Stanton. And in the end, I think that is what became their downfall, is they created a lot of self-inflicted wounds that ran up the costs and delayed it. And it was entirely self-inflicted. So, do you remember what kind of strategy, you know, how did you think that you were going to deal with this on a legal perspective? Did you think you had a chance?
That's a great question. I think, you know, talking about the early days of this saga, you know, I often felt like there was just tremendous both personal and professional pressure, and I was pulled in a lot of different directions, because in our legal work, what we were learning is that the laws are heavily tilted in favor of pipeline developers. And we learned that the process itself is fundamentally unfair, so that pipeline construction typically starts very quickly, and it is there are certain procedural tricks that are used to keep pipeline challengers from having their day in court and their opportunity for that fair hearing before the project starts going in the ground. And so that's what we knew we were up against. We learned that, as far as we could ever find out, no, you know, citizen and citizen-driven legal opposition had ever stopped a pipeline before. And at the same time, there was this barrage of calls and emails and requests for help. And I think people naturally tend to turn to attorneys for immediate answers and for commitments to help. And we, you know, will you take this case? And we were still learning about natural gas pipelines and what the laws are that apply and what the opportunities are for review of environmental and community impacts and what the process even is for concerns to be raised. And so that it was a very, very hectic time from that standpoint. And, you know, Nancy, I'm sure this was the case for you. For 6 years, this was the Atlantic Coast Pipeline was the thing people wanted to talk to me about. Everyone at home, everyone in the Shenandoah Valley that I talked to, that was the first thing. What's the status? What's going on? Are you going to stop it? And as the project seemed to continue to advance and a lot of the opposition, you know, we were working very hard, but there was this long period where we were just kind of bouncing off of this seemingly invincible aura around this project. And, you know, people then started asking you what was going on and telling you they thought that you would lose. And so that was just, that was a challenging dynamic.
Right. Feel like I felt like it was a pressure cooker all the time. And, and certainly the community, we were not only fighting what Dominion was doing, but we were also educating the community.
Yes.
And letting them know, because at the beginning, you know, none of us knew what a pipeline, what this was about. And, you know, on the surface, I mean, Dominion spun a very good story that this was going to bring economic prosperity to the community. And don't worry about if you blow up, perhaps, or if your drinking water supply is destroyed. But the money that's going to come in from the jobs and the jobs that are temporary, of course, and the taxes that are rolled in will just make it all okay. And so we had to educate people that this project wasn't needed to turn on the lights, and that there were going to be far more negative impacts than there were positive outcomes from it. And that they were helpless, you know, they felt powerless, but that we had to tell them that they weren't powerless, that we could help armor them. And so, you know, it was constant. It was every day, and even, you know, in your dreams about it. And people would come up gradually. I would say at the beginning, the community was pretty split. Maybe this is a good thing. Maybe it's not so bad. By the end, across all walks of life, people would come up to you, and it was the opening greeting in every conversation, and probably for you too. And people would say, who I never would have thought would be against this, they would say, you know, keep up the good fight. Thanks for the fight. I don't think you're going to win, but thanks for sticking up for the community. And it got so intense that even if we would leave the area and go on vacation, a friend of mine and I go up to New York City every year at Christmas time. And one of the things we do, we look at the Christmas lights, and then we go visit Santa Claus at Macy's. And so Santa asks you what you want for Christmas. And I asked him if he could stop a natural gas pipeline that I was fighting. And Santa said that he would do it. So I figured if we have Santa on our side, we were going to win eventually. So did,
and we did.
And we did. Did you ever think that we might not win?
There were certainly some dark times. Back in late 2017, early 2018, permit after permit after permit was being issued for this project. And, you know, at that point, we were already years into this fight. We had tried to get these permits reconsidered. We tried to redirect this project. That hadn't been successful. And we were really left with no choice but to challenge these deeply flawed permits in court. But there was a huge amount of pressure on the legal team at that point. And, you know, we never would have stopped this project if it weren't for the citizen and grassroots efforts. At that particular moment, though, if the legal cases didn't get this project sent back to the drawing board, there wasn't going to be any more time to continue to bring out the facts about this project. And it often just felt like so many people were looking to the legal team. We were having to bring multiple cases at once. All of these permits were being issued at the same time in this cascade. We had to, if we wanted to challenge them and they were improper and needed to be challenged, we had to do all of that simultaneously, you know, and during that time, you know, our office, our Virginia office is based in Charlottesville. Walking around downtown Charlottesville, you know, when the railroad cars go by, you could see the Atlantic Coast Pipeline segments going by on the railroad cars. And tree felling in the path of the pipeline started. Some of the pipeline started going in the ground over in West Virginia. It was very real and very scary at that time.
That's exactly right.
For you?
That's exactly right. You know, our motto from the very beginning was death by a thousand cuts. And so we knew we had to keep being agile. And, you know, when they got one permit, then we'd focus on something else. And we were getting phone calls from landowners who were feeling, you know, Dominion was taking landowners to court in preparation for taking their land with eminent domain. And so they were being forced to sign these easements. And at one point, the majority of the easements had been signed, you know, people very reluctantly by people. And the permits were being issued. And there was one point, just like you said about the pipe, there was one point on Interstate 81, I had a flat tire and I was sitting at the rest area waiting for AAA to come. And I sat there and it was a time when Dominion was transporting its pipe. And we all knew what the pipe was. It was distinctive. It was green. It was a certain size. There was no other pipeline project that it was going to. And I sat there for about an hour waiting for AAA and watching truck after truck filled with pipe going toward, going toward the construction zone. And it was incredibly depressing, but we couldn't let the people that we were working with think those thoughts. And so when we sent out Augusta County Alliance letters, talking to people, when we sent out e-blasts, trying to rally people for things, asking them to write letters, contact their representatives or show up at a meeting, we always ended it with, this pipeline is not a done deal.
Yeah.
This pipeline is not enough. We even had stickers on our snail mail communications that we sent out to people. We had stickers made up that said, this pipeline is not a done deal, and stuck them on the envelope just to keep people's spirits up and to think that we were gonna do this.
Nancy, what got you through that time? What were some of the bright spots during
those dark times?
During those times?
Well, I think that we stayed on message and that the community, the community gets all the credit for it. They showed up.
Absolutely.
It was a cast of thousands. And they showed up when we said, write a letter. They, even though they'd written 10 letters already, they wrote a letter. And they took pictures and they went out with video cameras. If there was flooding that was happening on the proposed route, they took movies of it and sent it and recorded it and we had a couple of really important points of things that happened that just made us think that there might be a little crack in the armor. We, in 2017, we had a corn planting, and we joined forces with the Nebraska Keystone XL pipeline fight, the Cowboy and Indian Alliance out there. I had joined two groups that traditionally weren't allies of each other, the Cowboys and the Indians, and they had already been fighting the Keystone XL pipeline for a long time, and they had these sacred seeds, corn seeds, that had been lost for 100 years that they had regerminated and were planting them in the path of the Keystone Pipeline as seeds of resistance. And we made contact with them, and they came, and we planted seeds of resistance in the path of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, and we joined forces with the Mountain Valley Pipeline, which was a similar fight that's still ongoing down in a little bit further south of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline and in West Virginia too. They planted the seeds of resistance, and the empowerment of putting those seeds in the ground and seeing that us come together and grow those seeds while we had a plane flying with a banner that said plant corn, not pipelines, was pretty incredible. So there were a beginning of that. The other big thing was the Churchville pipe yard.
That was so important.
Oh, that was huge. In January of 2018, Dominion said we're going to set up a pipe yard, an industrial workspace, to start building this pipe and putting it in the ground. And we had consecutive meetings at the Augusta County Board of Zoning Appeals, and we turned out hundreds of people in January, in February, and finally a decision was made in March. And Dominion was told for the first time in 4 years, they were told no. The BZA stood up and said, we're listening to the people, this is wrong, and no. And that started us on the right path, I think.
That was a huge local community safety concern.
That was. It was, you know, there were flooding issues and traffic issues, and it just, the BZA was correct. They were protecting the community against and standing up and doing their job. And it was so important, and I think Dominion was taken aback. And after that, things started shifting. Y'all had some huge, talk about your big wins in court.
Yeah, that was just absolutely critical. I mean, when I think about getting through that period, you know, for certainly for the legal team, the persistence and the spirit of our clients, we were privileged to represent 15 fantastic organizations throughout this fight, and the persistence of the local organizations and the local community was just always so inspiring. And so that was always motivating, even when things felt really difficult. But a really important win for us and a big turning point, I think, was winning that first court ruling in May of 2018, 5 days after oral argument in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond. The court throughout one of the required permits for the pipeline. And it was incredibly moving for me. I mean, I went home to the farm that evening so that I could tell my parents about it in person, you know, and give them the news. And just the fact that justice was being done at long last was incredibly moving. And for me, you know, my work in life is based on the belief that the courts are the ultimate backstop and the ultimate equalizer, and that at the end of the day, the facts and the law will prevail. And there was a long time in this fight before we were able to have that day in court. We ended up having many days in court, but there was a long time in this fight where it felt like that wouldn't be the case. And the facts and the law did carry the day, and that was proved to be true in the face of a project that often until that moment just looked invincible. It was a huge shot in the arm for us and for everybody that was involved in this fight. But there were a lot of ups and downs. I mean, we weren't able to stop construction right away, even though the pipeline had lost a required permit. There was a brief halt in construction in the summer, and then permits were quickly reissued and construction started again. And it wasn't until we won another important court ruling in December of 2018 that construction was stopped. We won another case shortly after that helped solidify and extend that halt in construction. And when I think back on it, you know, we didn't know at the time, back in December of 2018, we didn't know that construction would never resume.
Start again. Yep.
But it was it was also around that time that, let's see, it was really the winter, I think, of 2019 that the opposition started to really be taken seriously. And news articles finally started to cover the idea that the Atlantic Coast Pipeline might not be built as a realistic possibility and as a valid point of view that needed to be covered.
That's right. The newspaper article started calling it the imperiled pipeline or the embattled pipeline. And that was the cracks were there. And then, you know, then we were at the Supreme Court, which just is amazing to think about. We started from that dining room table and wound up in the Supreme Court, not necessarily something we wanted to do, but something amazing. And then you want to talk about July 5th of 2020?
Sure. Here we were at that time, we'd been at the Supreme Court in the winter. And then as we moved through 2020, we were in the middle of the awful coronavirus pandemic. I had continued to see my mother. I was at her house in Stanton. We were sitting down to a late lunch, and Greg Buport, my colleague Greg Buport, who led the SCLC legal team throughout this whole saga, called me with the news that Dominion and Duke had decided to cancel the pipeline. And I was overwhelmed with gratitude for our clients and for the whole community that just refused to back down, and gratitude for my colleagues. I mean, for attorneys who literally did jumping jacks to keep themselves awake while writing briefs all night and over the weekend. It was just overwhelming.
It was surreal.
How did you find out?
It was surreal. It was July 5th, and I was actually taking a nap on the couch down at my brother's. Everybody had gone out on the lake but me, and I got a phone call from Kate, and then immediately after that from Greg, saying Dominion's pulled the plug on it, and I was like, am I having a dream?
Yeah.
And then I realized, no, as a historian, I think, you know, it was July 5th, but I'm going to say it was the 4th of July weekend. It's the best 4th of July since 1776. So, I mean, it's still hard. And it was a small bit of light in the middle of a deadly pandemic. I mean, it was amazing. And, you know, I think, you know, it confirms what we knew, that the arc of history does move toward justice, and people should never go up. People should never give up. They should never give up. We can. David can beat Goliath, and it really has elevated this community into. So it's kind of switched us on to now. You know, as the Alliance for the Shenandoah Valley, we know that we have a special place, and we know what we have to do to make sure it's here for the next generation.
I think that sense of encouragement and empowerment for everybody who cares about the future of this region, the Shenandoah Valley, Virginia, or their own home places around the country, it should be a source of inspiration and strength. And for me, I think it just really shows what is possible when people come together around a sense of place and a sense of their community and take a stand and refuse to give up and are able to combine that with the effect of the law as that equalizer that I was talking about. It shows what's possible, and it's really, I think it continues to inspire the folks who've been involved in this effort, but I hope to inspire others,
right,
whether to fight a project like this or even another kind of project.
I think it's changed the dynamics of projects like this, and we still have a fight with the Mountain Valley Pipeline to the south of us. Hopefully, we all need to get behind them, but we know how to fight it, and we know that the power of the people with the law behind them can win. And so hopefully the next fight will be easier.
I hope so too.